Welcome to the February 22nd, 2013 Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. Hey there. So, I am Addison Berry, and I am hosting the Drupalize Me podcast, which comes out every other Friday, where we talk about all kind of stuff Drupal and Drupal related and Drupalness. Today I am joined by a bunch of bots. I have with me today
Joe Schindler,
as well as
Andrew Berry
and
Kyle Hoffmeyer,
and last but definitely not least,
Ben Chavez.
Woo! I always do that. I always kind of blow the audio out, so it just kind of like. I get excited to be on the podcast. It's nice to just like hang out and talk about stuff. For today's podcast, we're going to be talking about automating stuff. And I don't know very much about this. So for me, it's very much a learning opportunity because we have a bunch of experts. Well, folks who have done quite a lot with it. And so we're going to be asking a whole lot of questions. But if you've been wondering what things like Puppet and Jenkins and all of these like crazy cool automated tools that people are using to help with their development processes and building things, this is the place to figure out what that stuff is and how people are using it out in the real world. Before we get to that though, I'm going to do my little announcement section. First thing I want to mention is that Lullabot is hiring a sales representative for our education department, meaning Drupalize Me. So if you want to find out more about that or know somebody who you think would be a good fit, lullabot.com/jobs, and then there's the Drupal sales representative position listed there, along with some others that we're hiring for as well. So check that out. And we have videos that came out this week on various things to extend views. Really, I think popular and commonly used modules, but not everybody still knows about them, which is Views Bulk Operations and EVA, which stands for something. Entity Views Attachment, that's it. And also, right now, bots are descending at my place in Copenhagen, and we're going to be spending an entire week recording a whole bunch of really cool stuff. So look for some neat stuff coming out in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be recording stuff like Git and Entity API and some stuff on SAS. So anyway, it should be a really fun week, and we have a lot of cool new material coming down the pipeline. And then the other thing is that we are beginning to prep for DrupalCon Portland. It's coming up in May, folks, and I got word we've finally settled on our Lullabot party, which is going to be on May 21st. That's the first night of DrupalCon. It's going to be really pretty cool. So just putting it out there, make sure you arrange for that in your schedule. In terms of the Drupal sphere, I think the big news that happened this week is feature freeze. So on February 18th, which was Monday, we had feature freeze for Drupal 8, which means that's it. No new features are going into Drupal 8. From this point forward, it's all about kind of refactoring what's there, making it better, fixing all the bugs, making them work together really well. But no brand new features are going in anymore into Drupal 8. So if you want to get a sense of what Drupal 8 has and is going to have for you when it comes out, you can go check it out now and see what's in there. And ideally, help get us over the line so it actually gets released. So lots of really, really, really cool stuff in Drupal 8. And I think a lot of people were stressing and freaking out about the feature freeze deadline. A lot of people were kind of working furiously to get things in. And now there's kind of a collective sigh in the community of, okay, it is what it is. And now we need to march on to getting everything cleaned up and fixed up. So that was pretty big. We have a whole bunch of events coming up. All right, the event list seems to get longer every single time. This weekend, so February 21st through 24th, the entire weekend in here, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Drupal Camp Bolivia at Cochabamba and Wampi, another Lalabot, is actually going to be there. He lives in Spain, but he is in Bolivia for this camp. So go by and meet Wampi. Drupal Camp Ottawa in Ontario, Canada. Are you going to that, Andrew?
No, I'm not. I am super sad. And anyone who's in Ontario should definitely check it out because it's worth going to.
All right, cool. Drupal Camp Slovakia in Bratislava. New Hampshire Drupal Summit in Concord, New Hampshire in the U.S. And then there are a couple of related events. They're not Drupal events, but related. jQuery Europe is happening in Vienna, Austria. Scale, which is the Southern California Linux Expo, is happening in Los Angeles, California. And there's also a Tokyo Open Source Conference happening in Tokyo, Japan. That sounds cool. That's all this weekend, so take your pick. Coming up soon, as in March-ish, Drupal Camp London is happening in the UK, and actually a bunch of us are going to be there. Myself and Kyle and Joe, along with Blake Hall and Sally Young, are all going to be at the camp in London, and we're also doing a workshop the first day of that camp. So if you go to the Drupal Camp London website, we'll have a link in the show notes. You can check it out and sign up for that workshop, which is separate from the actual conference ticket. Because the conference, the camp itself, is actually sold out. So, sorry, if you didn't get in, you didn't get in. But we'll also be just hanging out. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of Drupal people hanging around, having fun. Drupal Camp Stockholm in Sweden. Drupal Camp Phoenix in Arizona. There's a Drupal Sprint weekend, the weekend of March 9th and 10th, where there are going to be sprints happening all over the world. So there's lots of different local user groups that are getting together and just running sprints. I think it's mostly focused on core, but it's pretty much just getting together and sprinting and working on whatever needs to be worked on within the community. So again, I'll have show notes that has a list of where all those locations are. And if you want to run your own, how to get sort of more information on how to get set up with that. And then we also have Drupal Summit Loja, I think, Loja, L-O-J-A. I'm really just bad with languages. That is in Ecuador, so that'll be happening later on in March as well. So, lots of stuff happening all over the place, people. Cool. That was a whole lot of announcement stuff. It's just because our community is just so awesome. What else can I do? But let's get to the point of this podcast. And, so I'm going to toss this out, and see who wants to speak to it. But basically we, as in like the general we, but me, I keep hearing about all these cool things and systems and sort of setups and processes and stuff that gets set up that's helping to make the whole development process in the back end, you know, like, I don't know, make the dev site, you know, do things so that it's running the latest stuff and so we can test stuff. Things like that are going on in the background, but I don't really know much about the pieces involved. And there's lots of words, and like I said, you know, like Puppet and Jenkins is definitely something we talk about a lot within Lullabot, but I'm not entirely clear like what they are and what their purpose is. So so I guess I think the place to start for me and probably for a lot of people is, what is the problem that all of those tools is actually trying to solve? Like, what is their purpose?
Well, I mean, I guess there's a couple different problems they're trying to solve. Jenkins is a lot about running jobs. It's kind of like a super cron. I mean, what are some of the jobs, Ben, that you're automating with Jenkins?
Well, we do some cron jobs, just so that they're kind of external and easy to manage with a nice web interface. But we also have a bunch of jobs that are hooked into GitHub. So when a commit is made to GitHub, certain jobs run. So like check the most recent copy of the repo out on the dev server and make sure that's all up to date. So when somebody makes a change on their local dev site, then that all automatically gets pushed into our central dev site so that other people can see the changes right away.
I think you could almost step back a little bit and kind of look at the problems as what we're talking about. Two things here, Puppet and Jenkins, which to me solve two sort of different classes of problems, and the problems that they're solving. And so Jenkins to me is, it's basically a way of automating something in a repeatable manner. And I think that like deploying code to a dev server is a really good example of this, where it's nice to have it automated so you don't have to go through the steps to do it manually every time you want to update the code on the dev server. But it's also really nice to have it done exactly the same way every single time. And most deployment processes involve a lot of steps. I mean, Drupal, like even a really simple deployment process involves checking out the latest copy of the code, you know, clearing the cache, updating the database, running features revert, probably a couple of other things as well that are sort of site or application dependent. So being able to ensure that that happens in a repeatable way every single time without me having to go through and check all of those things off of my checklist or off the napkin is one of the things that I think Jenkins does really well. And one of the reasons we end up using it to sort of automate those types of tasks. And then a tool like Puppet I see it as being more about managing configuration. It's a way of bundling up the configuration that makes up different environments. So different servers, for example, a development environment and a production environment, into code in a way that you could take that Puppet configuration and apply it to a server, and you'll end up with the exact same server every single time. It's almost like a cookie cutter for producing a web server or a database server, or probably all kinds of other things you can do with it that I'm not aware of. But at the end, you know, there's these two big, the primary thing you're trying to solve is making things repeatable so that you can do it exactly the same every single time and eliminate sort of the human error factor.
Like, fair to say that Jenkins is about having a repeatable list of steps, like do steps 1 through 10 in those order exactly the same every time, whereas Puppet is more about making sure you eventually get your server, your develop environment to some state. Is that a way to think about it?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't argue with that.
So are these tools like, so this is really just sort of server focused? I mean, in the sense that like, you know, you have your whole stack of like, you know, I'm building a Drupal site and I'm doing my Drupal things, and that this is sort of the stuff back behind that. I mean, it's not the Drupal site specifically, right? I mean, we use Drupal and are doing things like that, but mostly this is about like setting up a development server and having the development server be in a certain state doing certain things for us.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable. I mean, there's nothing really in Jenkins or Puppet which is tied to Drupal. Obviously, we create jobs in Jenkins that do things like run Drush commands, and once you do that, then obviously your specific command is tied to Drupal. Likewise, with Puppet, you might have a Puppet configuration that sets up Apache and all the different Apache modules and PHP, so it works well with Drupal. But there's nothing preventing you from using Jenkins or Puppet to deploy Ruby sites or other PHP applications or a mail server even.
Right on. So Puppet is handling like actual like I need to create a new server and I want it to be set up just like this so that it's identical, say, to my live server or something. Are there like, I'm also like, is that it? Or are there other tools that are out there that are similar to it? Is there a reason that we use Puppet instead of other ones?
Well, there's Chef, and I know Ben, you did some work looking into Chef at some point, didn't you?
A little bit. I looked at Chef and Puppet and CF Engine, which is like the granddaddy of the configuration management sphere. And you know, I originally went into Puppet a number of years ago when it was really just a question of, do you want to do CF Engine or Puppet? Chef had just barely started and it wasn't really stable, so it wasn't really an option at that point. And And CF Engine is great, and it does a lot of the same things that Puppet does, but Puppet was just a little bit easier to use, and it had their fact system is what they call it, to where you basically for free get all kinds of statistics and information about your server just by having Puppet there. Things like how much memory does the server have, how many CPUs and what kind of CPUs, what's the operating system, what version of a bunch of stuff. And it's all free that comes with Puppet, and so that was really the tipping point for me as to why I went with Puppet way back when.
So you're talking about, like, obviously, you know, free, you're getting these reports because you have it, but is this software, is the software itself free? Is it open source? Like, where does it come from?
It is, and all three of those tools are open source. I don't have, you know, a lot of experience with the other ones other than kind of looking at them, but Puppet has kind of a dual license model. It has the open source version, but it also has an enterprise version where they have kind of a GUI interface and a bunch of other things that they try to upsell you to. But yeah, you can get all of the functionality with the open source version as long as you don't mind getting in there and typing.
Oh, no typing, no.
It's also the same thing with Jenkins. And one of the things to keep in mind is that Jenkins was actually forked from Hudson when basically there were some issues with how Oracle was running the Hudson project, and so the community forked. So when you're looking up a documentation online, there's a lot of it which might refer to Hudson, and older versions of Hudson and Jenkins were identical, but now they've both sort of, they're not necessarily identical anymore. I know Hudson 3 was just released, but, you know, if you're looking at anything, I would say within the last 2 years, make sure, you know, you're probably looking for the word Jenkins. And if you find documentation that's older than that and uses Hudson to describe what it's doing, it's probably going to be exactly the same.
Are there other tools other than Hudson/Jenkins that do this same kind of thing that you guys have ever encountered or looked at?
Well, there's always the standard cron, but it's pretty basic compared to what Jenkins can do.
What are the different, because you mentioned that at the beginning, like, you basically use it to run cron along with other stuff, but like, why use something like Jenkins and go through the hassle? I'm assuming there's some hassle involved in setting it up. Just to run cron when I already have cron on my server and I can just, you know, toss things into that.
Well, cron, it is kind of limited. You have a certain amount of granularity as to when you can run your jobs. Basically, you can run jobs on a time base. You can run it at a certain hour, at a certain minute, at a certain day, which you can do with Jenkins, but you can do so much more where you can do triggered events. So, like, when somebody commits to GitHub, it can trigger an event and then the job runs then. Mm-hmm. Where you can't do that with cron. Cron is simply a time-based scheduling system.
Right, okay.
So you can set it up so that when someone does a commit to GitHub, GitHub calls your Jenkins instance, right? With a webhook, I think? So that way your Jenkins instance doesn't have to be pinging GitHub every minute saying, hey, do you have an update? Do you have an update? Is there a new commit? Is there an update?
Is this something that GitHub is set up to do specifically, though? Like, or could you do that with any kind of web service? Or does it just need to have an API that you can talk to? Or, like, how do you do that? How do you set that up?
Well, in Jenkins, you set up basically a callback URL for each job that you want to have called remotely. And then in your remote system, like GitHub or whichever it is, you would configure like a post-commit hook that just calls that URL. And then that triggers Jenkins to kind of wake up and do stuff.
All right. So you're using post-commit hooks basically to call Jenkins on the commit. So it's really sort of your version control system, essentially, is calling Jenkins. Okay.
That makes sense. And of course, that's just one example. I mean, the sky's the limit, really. Just something that triggers a job, as long as it can call back a URL. It doesn't have to be a repo or whatever. But
right. Yeah, so basically, Jenkins, like when you do Jenkins jobs, there's a URL that's exposed that would fire that job.
That's right.
Is there a way to protect that so that not anybody could randomly just fire jobs off?
Yeah, there's API keys and authentication that goes into it.
Cool.
We actually use that functionality for Drupalize Me, and it's part of the process that allows us to, after a video is encoded and we've got all the various different formats of that video and we need to synchronize those out to all of the sort of edge servers that someone connects to when they're streaming a video, Drupal knows about the fact that the video was encoded in which particular video, and it triggers a Jenkins job by calling the appropriate callback URL, and it passes in a couple of additional parameters that Jenkins job can then use, and it basically just does the equivalent of running a shell script on each of the edge nodes and telling them to phone home and get a new copy of file X and synchronize that file out. So, you know, it's not just it's not necessarily just related to like code deployment or like creating servers and that kind of thing either. There's all kinds of potential use cases. Like Ben was saying, you know, it's like cron, but you're not limited to triggering things based on time. I was sitting here thinking in my head, Puppet and Jenkins are kind of like, you could make the equation to a couple of well-known Drupal modules. And I would say that you could consider Puppet to be somewhat similar to the features module, in that it's basically taking all of your configuration and putting it into code in some way so that you can reuse it on all of your environments over and over and over without having to go and recreate that view or recreate that Apache configuration file and make sure that you've gotten all the points by checking them off your list. And then Jenkins is probably equivalent to something like the trigger module or even rules, but something that allows you to basically do something when something else happens. It's really flexible, though. Like you can sort of determine what is the something that happens, and you can determine what is the something that gets done. So it really becomes this. Once you've gotten it set up and played around with it a little bit, all of a sudden your eyes kind of open up and you're like, oh, I could do everything with Jenkins. This is great. Maybe minus washing the dishes. I haven't figured that part out yet.
So that's why its icon is like a little butler, right?
Yeah.
I mean, to further extend your analogy, Joe, something else interesting about Puppet when you compare it to features is with Drupal, if you have something that's exported in features like a configuration setting or a view, and then you go through the UI and you change it, when you go back to features, you can say, no, enforce what my code says to do for this configuration. You know, I know you've turned on anonymous user registration and we actually want that off, and features will go and revert that configuration back to match what's in code. And Puppet will do the same thing. If you go and you edit a configuration file behind Puppet's back, next time it runs, it will notice that configuration file has been changed and revert it to what is in the Puppet repository. So, you know, that's a really powerful feature there. And then likewise, you know, if you start comparing Jenkins to rules and triggers, with rules, there's a lot that you can do through code, where you don't have to, you just write code and you implement Drupal hooks and you don't have to actually use rules at all. And that's sort of analogous to how it is with cron jobs, where you're basically dropped to a shell script and programming it out. With Jenkins, you also get, just like with rules, a user interface in your web browser to configure and control Jenkins. And just sort of like with rules, how you might stick in a little bit of PHP, you know, in a couple of different places to bridge some of the gaps that it's not solving for you. Just like with Jenkins, you might stick in a couple of snippets of shell commands to actually run some commands to do whatever you know, Jenkins doesn't do out of the box.
Cool. Those are nice analogies. That makes it a little more digestible for me, I think.
I'd point out that, like, kind of along those lines, talking about Jenkins and extending its functionality, noting that there's also a whole slew of different plugins that you can get for Jenkins to do additional things that it doesn't do out of the box. And I'm pretty sure that the integration with GitHub that we've got in our setup isn't something that Jenkins did out of the box. We had to install an additional plugin to get that sort of tightly coupled integration. And there's all kinds of other things that you can do with it. You know, like instead of sending an email when this job fails, you could have it send an SMS to some number when the job fails. by installing the appropriate plugin and configuring it.
Or shoot a Nerf dart.
I read once about a plugin that would allow the host computer to speak text when something happened. And I was trying to figure out, how is that even useful? Like, if the server in a data center somewhere is all of a sudden like, your job failed. Like, if there's nobody around to hear it, did the job actually fail or did it succeed?
That's creepy.
Even if there was somebody around to hear it in a data center, they probably wouldn't anyway.
So, cool tool, really useful. How is that actually like set up? Like, where is that set up? Like, where does Puppet and Jenkins exist in the interwebs somewhere, I'm assuming, to do his job, and sort of what's involved in setting that up? Like, basically, if I'm not like a sysadmin, you know, master like Ben, is this something I even want to contemplate?
Well, Jenkins is relatively simple to set up and get running. If you're familiar with the command line, you can play around with Jenkins just by downloading the .war file, and then you can run that using Java at the command line, which is, you know, built into OS X or other operating systems. It's a little bit more tricky to do on Windows just because of the way Windows command line interface is, but you can do that, and that will let you play around with it and use it, but only on your local machine. So it really helps if you're setting it up on a server, if you have something like Ubuntu, say, or any of the Debian distributions at this point, where setting up Java is really, really easy. But I think with Jenkins, probably the initial setup is where it's easy. And it's the configuration, figuring out what you want to do and how to automate it, that's hard.
If you want to just play around with Jenkins and kind of get an idea of what you can do with it, OpenShift, which is a like Red Hat's cloud offering, you can sign up at openshift.redhat.com, and you can basically build one cloud instance for free. And one of their prepackaged ones is Jenkins. And so you can just, like, through a couple clicks, you can have a Jenkins server up and running. And you can't really do a whole lot with it since it's not tied into necessarily your infrastructure out of the box. But it gives you an idea of, like, hey, this is what the interface looks like, and you can start to play around with it.
So I get the idea of having, Jenkins on your server and running jobs, just sort of like how you might do with local cron or something like that. But what happens when you have multiple servers or multiple environments that you need to manage? Can you use Jenkins to manage more than one system?
You can. And Jenkins actually has the concept of nodes, which basically lets you set up like SSH key logins to different servers, and it can run jobs through that SSH connection. So we actually have that set up at Lullabot. We have our central kind of management server where Jenkins and Puppet lives. And then our other servers just have Jenkins accounts that the main Jenkins server can SSH to and actually do its jobs through that interface. So you can certainly manage multiple servers through one interface.
So we have like a centralized...
That's a huge win over cron.
Yeah, that is, right? So we have like a centralized place. We have Jenkins.
What about setting up Puppet? That's not something that I personally have done. I've played with like deploying configuration, but I've never set things up so that it's actually working. How involved is that, and what does that take?
It's probably on about the same level as most other services on a server. It is pretty much tied to Unix-based systems. I think that they have some, you know, experimental code out there for Windows, but it's very Unix-centric. But the guys at the Puppet Labs, which is the organization that puts that out, they have packages and repositories for all of the major distributions, so like all the Debian and Red Hat-based distributions. So it's just a matter of installing the packages to get it installed. And then then the documentation is actually pretty good on kind of stepping you through how to set up the server so that it's listening for incoming requests, and then how to tell the clients where the server is and get the encryption keys all set up. So it's probably about on the same level as setting up an Apache system from scratch or a MySQL system from scratch. You have to install the package and then look at the documentation on what's next sort of steps.
Right. So with Puppet, so Jenkins you could run on your, you know, local, but then there's this really cool centralized thing which is super handy. But with Puppet, I mean, Puppet's like creating new servers. So I'm assuming it's Puppet ends up sitting sort of in its own separate place and then talking out to other, you know, computers basically to say, I'm going to set up this server this way or something like that. Like, is that the idea, or like where would Puppet typically live in a normal setup?
Well, in a normal data center type infrastructure, you typically have a Puppet server, which is the centralized location where all the rules live. And then all of the other servers that use it for its configuration would be set up as a Puppet client. And those clients would check in periodically with the Puppet server and say, hey, what is my state that I should be at? And then the Puppet server would look at the host name and go through its rules and say, and find out what recipes and what rules apply to that server, send it back, and then that client would go through those rules and kind of get to the state that it's supposed to be at. So somebody earlier said that Puppet is kind of like a state machine, which is exactly what it is. Basically, you set up a set of rules that say, this is the state that this server should be in, and then every iteration, it gets closer and closer to that if there's like dependencies and whatnot. It works them out. And just gets to that state. Now, you can also run Puppet in standalone mode, so you don't have to have the server and infrastructure and all that set up. So where you can just take those rules and have a local copy and tell the Puppet client to just, okay, use this set of rules that I have right here in this directory and make yourself this web server rule that installs Apache and sets it up and that sort of thing. So there are different modes that you can run it in.
So what I kind of want to start wrapping down. This has been a really great overview. I'm curious in terms of like how you guys have learned setting this stuff up and using it, and like what are the resources you used, or what resources are out there that you think would be great places for people to start trying to wrap their head around all this?
So I've been coming at it from a different side than Ben has. Ben's been setting up a bunch of Lolobot servers and setting up integration with some of our client sites and so on. And I came into Puppet through using it with Vagrant for running virtualized machines on my own machine that would match what our client environments were like. So that way when I was debugging, the state would be reasonably similar to what production was like. And so, I hadn't used Puppet until maybe 2-3 months ago. And I would say the biggest helpful resource that I've had are the questions on Stack Exchange. Puppet's configuration, it's not really a programming language. Like, it doesn't run through each line and execute everything one after the other like how it would in a PHP or JavaScript application. So it takes a bit to wrap your head around that, and some of the configuration isn't intuitive to a programmer necessarily. Also, it uses certain words, there are Puppet classes and there are Puppet objects and so on, but they behave a little bit differently in terms of how they interact and how they inherit configuration from one another. So these are things which are in the Puppet documentation. But I found as a programmer, there were a lot of good questions that people were asking from a programmer's standpoint that were really helpful on Stack Exchange. There's also a Google Groups mailing list for Puppet, which has a lot of really good questions and answers in it. And that I've found has been super helpful in learning how Puppet works.
Yeah. I've been learning Jenkins via the brute force method, where I say, okay, I need to make it do this. And then I click on things until it does something similar to that. And just kind of, I don't know, I'm very much a learn by kind of just playing with the tool. And being able to, since it is so easy to like set it up with a virtual machine or something like that, I've done that on my local host and just kind of played around in a safe environment where I can be like, well, what happens if I set up a job that does this and not actually destroy anything important? But the for Jenkins, the I've found the Jenkins website and the wiki to be really useful for information about configuring and using it in various different ways. There's also a fair amount of information about using Jenkins on Drupal.org. It's a commonly used tool, and so there's definitely I found information there. Again, remembering that it used to be called Hudson as well as can be important because a lot of the information refers to Hudson instead of Jenkins.
Cool, and I lean pretty heavily on the Puppet Labs documentation when I'm doing my rules. It's they have it pretty well laid out to where they have all of the different types of resources and classes that are supported out of the box and all of the parameters and stuff that you can give them. So I lean pretty heavily on that.
Right on. Cool. Well, so we probably should start to wrap things up. Does anybody have any last, oh my God, this is so cool, I have to say it, kinds of thoughts?
Well, Ben and I have actually started to work on a project of Puppet modules, which are we're making publicly available. There's a repository on GitHub called Lulla Puppet. If you Google it, you'll find it. And these are basically the same configurations that we use on our servers internally, but without any of the really Lullabot specific stuff that's a part of them. And so, you know, if anyone out there is thinking, well, you know, I know a little bit about Puppet, but it'd be really nice just to type, you know, one line in my own configuration and have Apache do a bunch of things. I know Ben's done a ton of work on different modules to make them reusable and have parameters so that they can sort of they can change their state. Like maybe you have one server with PHP and one without, and you don't have to rewrite all your rules. It might be a good place to start. And the examples there are pretty well documented, at least I was finding.
Nice. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot for hopping on. I know it was a little early in the morning for some of you. But I appreciate it. This is, Well, I think we may need to have further podcasts on this topic, but, really nice overview. So thanks a lot for coming on, sharing your knowledge, and we'll have lots of links in the show notes. So, for folks who want to dive into stuff more, we'll have lots of clickable things for you. And then last thing to mention in closing is if you have thoughts about the podcast in terms of stuff you've heard and questions you have about it or new topics that you would like us to talk about on the podcast and that kind of a thing, let us know. We're doing our thing, but we're certainly open to touching on topics that that you all are interested in listening about. You can contact us on Twitter. So twitter.com/DrupalizeMe. Facebook, same thing, facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. Or you can also use our contact form at drupalize.me/contact and send us an email. And of course, you can also always leave comments on the podcast pages on lullabot.com. Thanks a lot, everybody. And until next time in Drupal land, keep Drupaling, people. Bye.